Welcome to the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the third and final hour of tonight's live installment of the political cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, July 18th. I'm joined in studio tonight by my good friend and colleague, Bill Rowland. And for the last couple of segments of the second hour, we had brought to your attention a man who's doing great work, Russell James, an activist who is producing tangible results for our people and making a positive impact for our cause. Bill Rowland, we had asked Russell to continue on with us for one more segment, and I'd like to turn the reins of the interview back over to you, sir.
Well, thank you, James. I'm really just impressed with how well this demonstration was handled, particularly with regards to the hello?
Yes.
You're rolling, Bill.
I wasn't getting any feedback. Sorry about that. I thought I'd gone off. With regards to how you approach the other group and actually in an amicable and very friendly way challenge their views and sort of defused what could have been a really ugly confrontation by going to them first. And, I mean, if you had some tips for people who are going to be at anti-immigration protests, pro-white demonstrations, what would your, if you had three or four tips for them, what would those tips be?
I think I would probably say, one, understand that most of the time the protesters, the counter-protesters, many of them don't know why they're there. Many of them think of themselves as freedom-loving, as Constitution-loving, and try to communicate to them that you stand for law and order, that you stand for the rule of law. So don't be afraid to engage them in conversation. But in some cases, it won't always work. There are some places where if you do that, you can get yourself in trouble. If they seem like they want to be violent or if they want to have a problem back up, I could tell from the group standing over there that they were mostly people from New Hampshire and they weren't from out of state. Sometimes it can get pretty hectic and even dangerous when they come from out of state. But you know, basically just be respectful to them and understand that they really believe, many of them are so confused, they don't understand that liberalism isn't about freedom. It's anti-freedom. They should really be called anti-liberals. They hate freedom. They're all socialists, either Marxist socialists in the case of the Democrats or fascist socialists in the case of the Republicans. They are all liberals. The Republicans are not conservative people. But the Republicans don't show up to these counter-protests anyways, mostly the Marxist type that do. But just understand that most of them see themselves as the good guy. And if you can get across to them that you're the good guy, one of the things that I do online, not necessarily in person, but sometimes when I run into them in a forum somewhere online, is I make the case that they are parts of the empire. You know, they like to think of themselves as the rebel, as the revolutionary. And they're really not the revolutionary. They like to think of themselves as change agents, as they say. And they're really not. They're useful idiots for the empire. So I basically try to communicate to them that one, I'm a good guy. Personally, I'm a good guy. I'm not a bad guy. I'm not out to kill 6 million Jews tomorrow or anything like that. Two, that I stand for the rule of law. I stand for the Constitution. I stand for freedom. And four, that, or three, no matter what disagreements there are, I'm always willing to listen to their side of it because I really do believe that most of them want to be good, you know, they really do think that they're the good guy. You get some, like I said, that there was a couple of people there at the counter-protest, or on the side of the counter-protesters, that were truly not there to engage in a discussion. They wanted to silence the discussion. But those that were there thinking that they were the good people heard what I had to say, and they responded. At the end of the story, if you read the whole thing, at the end of it, they went home pretty quickly. I think within about 2 hours, all 15 to 20 of them had left and gone home, and we had a few more people show up, and we ended up with about 7 people, plus 4 kids that had just walked over because they lived in the area, and they were sort of siding with them or whatever, standing over there with them. But then after a while, they came over and stood with us. So we had like 11 or 12 people at the end, and they were all gone. And we continued with our protest for another few hours after that.
Well, Bill, so our guest right now is not only well-spoken and articulate and obviously well-educated, he's effective. And, you know, we've had so many guests on this program, but never am I more excited than to have a guest who can share results such as these. Bill, am I making too much of it?
Well, I think it is important that we, you know, we bring to our examples of what other people in other towns and other parts of the country are doing to further our cause. It's very important that people understand that they're not isolated, that they're not alone, and that they're not helpless, that you can get out and you can interact with your community and you can win people to our side, because we are on the right side. We are faced with a tyranny in the near future if our people don't stand up and make a difference and make a point and be visible and be active. We're going to be steamrolled by the regime that is now in power. And we have got to make our statement, and we have got to put forth our views and let them know that we're not just going to be steamrolled, but we're going to be like the little Chinese student in Tiananmen Square who steps in front of the tank and says, no, you're not going to run me over in front of the whole world. You know, this is very important for us, and what Russell's doing is very important, and we certainly hope, Russell, you keep doing it.
Well, I certainly second that notion, Bill, and echo it. And this is, again, what we were talking about during the first hour. I think it harkens back to that, the outstandingly well-attended anti-Obama rally, or should I say pro-freedom, pro-America rally that took place in downtown Chicago on July 9th. This was something that was completely hushed up and distorted by the mainstream press, so-called mainstream press. We have pictures on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, of the thousands and thousands of European Americans who were there to advocate the very same principles that this show espouses. And then we have, obviously, activists like Russell James here, who is doing a great job that perhaps without radio programs such as our own, and I'm not trying to give us too much credit. All credit here is due to the efforts of Russell. But if it weren't for outlets such as this, people wouldn't know that there are so many people like Russell who are doing good work and are effectively producing results for this movement and for the principles that we subscribe to. Russell, we only have about a minute, 2 minutes before break. I want to give you the opportunity to have the final word on this segment, and by all means, do make time to plug your website one more time. A final word, a final thought, Russell, that you'd like to convey to the audience.
Okay, I would just like to say that it isn't just me. This is a group of people, and a lot of them don't want their names said on the radio, so I won't. But it's a group of people that made this happen. And there's one person in particular who I won't name, but he's sort of the leader of the group, and he really put this whole thing together. You know, I just like to go and talk to people, so I did that part of it. But he really works hard, and there's so many others that are involved. And once again, the group is called Northeast White Pride, and that's newp.org.
Well, Russell,
that's
that being go ahead, Bill. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to repeat that. newp.org.
Spelt out the initials just as it sounds. Russell James, thank you so much for making yourself available to our audience this evening and for sharing with us very positive results that you and your team have produced. Please do stay in touch with us and let us know what further we can do to serve you and what we can do to help promote your efforts further.
You bet that I will, and thank you for having me on.
Russell James, everybody, always great to know that there are people out there doing work like he has done, and there are lots of them, so many more than you would ever know if you relied on Fox News and CNN to get your information. Bill, I tell you, this has been an unusually uplifting evening in the political cesspool, and we've still got 45 minutes to go. What are we going to do?
We got to
depress somebody. Our listeners are not knowing what show they're tuned into. We've got to depress people over the next half hour, or they might not tune in again.
This should not be a show where people come and listen, and it's unusual that we say positive, uplifting things. We should be having more shows about moving our people, energizing our people, motivating our people, and inspiring our people to go out and defend their own folk, to defend our tribe, to defend our people, to speak up for our race. because as we're told over and over, we're going to be a minority in 50 years or so. So what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to pretend that we don't have minority rights, that we're going to be treated like the majority as a minority? I'm not going to. I am going to advocate for my people and do what is best for my people, and everybody else can take care of themselves.
Just like every other ethnic minority in America is not only allowed, but encouraged to do. We'll be back with more right after this in the Political Cesspool. Sit tight, everyone.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Continuing on with the good news that apparently is the theme of tonight's program. And as Bill said, it should be. And there is a lot of things out there that we could take heart in. Certainly, God knows there's a lot that is out there that would dishearten us, and we try to make you aware of these things because you should be aware of the things that are going on around you, both good, bad, and indifferent, and we try to bring it all to your attention here in the cesspool. But because our message is so natural and healthy, and dare I say mainstream, this program has experienced considerable growth over the course of the last 5 years. We told you last week, and I want to repeat to you tonight as well, that Liberty News Radio Network continues to grow as well. We are very excited to let you know that LNR has added a great number of AM-FM affiliates to their station affiliates roster, and that is a list that continues to grow as the weeks go by. But also of equal importance for those of you tuned in tonight, or perhaps if you're tuning in later in the week on the archives, if you're traveling, if you're away from home, you're out of town, and the local radio station isn't there, so you can tune in via your car radio, you can now tune in over the telephone thanks to the Liberty News Wire, and that number is 801-769-2970. At that number, and that number is available to you at libertynewsradio.com, at that number, you will be able to tune into the Political Cesspool from anywhere in the world and listen to it over your telephone, via the cell phone, a landline, whatever. Just another great way that you can listen to the Political Cesspool radio program and all of the Liberty News Radio Network programming via the Liberty News Wire. Get their number at the website. And so now you can tune in over phone, Bill. You can tune in on the computer. You can tune in the car, on the radio, if you're in one of the cities that carry our shows. Onward and upward, my friend.
Absolutely onward and upward. And, of course, the news has been interesting over the past week, or really the past 2 or 3 weeks, starting with the death of that freak, Michael Jackson, who was criticized, I think, only by one politician in the whole country, and that was a New York congressman, Michael King, who actually came out and said, what are we doing celebrating or recognizing the death of this freak? But now there have been a string of these deaths. Walter Cronkite, of course, died. And this is a man who spent his career broadcasting on behalf of the enemies of Christianity and the white race. And there is a video that's available on YouTube. And I don't have the exact web address for that, the exact YouTube address. But you can go in and do a search on it, Walter Cronkite, Satan, something like that. But he actually boasted on camera at a meeting or the conference of the, I think it was the World Federalist Society, and he says in this YouTube video that he was glad to sit on the right hand of Satan to bring about a world government. Now, this is from his mouth to God, that he was glad to sit on the right hand of Satan in order to bring about world government. And he was at this, you know, the whole purpose of this meeting of the World Federalist Society, or whatever it's called, was to give him an award based on the World Governance Award, no less. Well, you're talking about being out in the open about your wanting to crush sovereignty around the world. And one of the people who came on in a recorded video congratulations was Hillary Clinton, you know, congratulating Walter Cronkite for sitting on the right hand of Satan, I suppose.
Well,
but
I guess
it just shows you that the media has had these type of people running the news business in this country for 50, 60 years. Walter Cronkite is a dinosaur as far as television news goes in terms of its history. And here he has been all along in favor of crushing out the sovereignty of nations for the sake of world governance, and even if it means getting the assistance of Satan.
Well, I guess if, in fact, Walter Cronkite was serving Satan during his time on Earth, I guess now in his passing, Walter Cronkite is getting his eternal reward, wouldn't you say, Bill?
We have to wonder how much he's enjoying his position with the devil right now. Yes, if he, in fact, still feels like the right hand is the place to be when it comes to Satan. But he, unfortunately, Walter Cronkite picked a bad day to die, because this is also the anniversary of the death of John Kennedy Jr. And, of course, the media did a big tribute to John Kennedy Jr. And the subject is always the same when it comes to remembering him, and that is his potential and how he might have been this and he might have been that, even though in his entire life he never showed any particular or spectacular ability of any kind. This just indicates how much the liberals themselves believe in the inherited capabilities of some people over others, because obviously John Kennedy didn't exhibit any great skill, leadership, or ability in his lifetime. He couldn't even keep a vanity magazine running without losing money, and yet he is still exalted as the prince who might have been, the king who might have been, just based on the fact that he was the son of another liberal incompetent who the press loved in 50 years ago. So, you know, we're all seeing this now, that what is good for the left is not good for the right, even though they sometimes show their hand and believe that the children, grandchildren, nephews, nieces of their favorite people should have these innate and inherited abilities to lead and succeed. And that's the way they treat John Kennedy, even though really, as far as ordinary people go, he was not that spectacular, and he didn't really do anything to prove that he could be the president.
Well, but I mean, to have descended from President JFK, well, isn't that much, as you mentioned, Bill, of a thing to be proud of anyway? I mean, we're not talking about Robert E. Lee Jr. here. I mean, where you would expect that he would be cut from a finer cloth. I mean, what did Kennedy do that was really that great except be a playboy?
Well, exactly. But see, it's that same set of beliefs, that same set of presumptions that made Obama president, the same set of assumptions that a mixed race, part African, part white candidate has to be the superior candidate because he embodies everything the liberal believes to be the perfect race, to be the perfect leader. A mixed race person with very liberal left-wing views who gives a big speech and makes him worthy of running this country. And yet, see, they do believe in inherited ability. They just don't believe it when we have the same views with regards to race, IQ, and inherited behavior. But if you look at, you know, something Keith was saying earlier, that the right to discriminate, the difference between, I think, what Keith believes and what I believe, and I don't really think there's too much difference, but Keith says that all the law should treat us all equally and that nobody, no law should discriminate. I take the opposite view. I think that we should have the right to discriminate because this is the right that the liberals exercise over us. They believe in the right to discriminate. Otherwise, we would not have affirmative action laws. We would not have hate crime laws staring us down through the barrel of a gun. Those are laws specifically indicate that the government and some groups and some people and some races do have the right to discriminate. So I believe in the right to discriminate because the liberals believe in that right.
What's good for the goose isn't good for the gander. Once again, Bill, when it comes to some of these double standards and hypocrisies that we certainly make mention to every installment of the Political Cesspool radio program. And what's sad is that God knows we're not the only people who see these double standards, but we're one of the very few radio programs that dare expose them. But I got another one for you, Bill, along that line. We're going to talk about it when the cesspool returns right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, Bill, I know we've got a few important things to talk about before we run out of time this evening, not the least of which is the hate crimes bill, which did pass. They've been trying to get that one in for a long time. It looks like it may become law, even though it has passed the Senate now. Is not signed into law yet. We'll give you some more information about that in a moment. But you were talking about the media's, the attention that the media has given the death of Walter Cronkite, the attention that they bestowed upon John Kennedy, and again, just more double standards that exist out there. Obviously, Bill, we can't go on television and say that we're proud of our family, that we're proud of our ancestors, because obviously, they're white Christians, and so there's nothing to be proud of there. You know, I had an ancestor that fought and died in Shiloh in the Confederate cavalry. Obviously, I can't be proud of him. But there was something. I just happened to be sitting in a restaurant for lunch here in town on Friday, and there was just gushing, fawning segment that was on CNN. I don't know what program CNN airs at that time of day. I didn't even catch the show, but I saw the segment of the show, and it was about Michelle Obama's roots, and that how great it was that she had descended. She had a great grandfather apparently who was a slave in 1850 in South Carolina, and he became a freed man, and she became the First Lady of the United States, and just how great it was and how proud she was to have had that ancestry, and just what a marvelous story it was. Again, Bill, the disconnect and double standards, once again, obviously readily apparent.
Well, of course, because what else are you going to talk about when you're talking about the United States anymore? A friend of mine, Stan Hess, who is a good friend of this show and gives me wise counsel on occasion, and certainly has experience as a leftist and even as a Marxist Leninist in his youth, has pointed out to me that the new patriotism is race mixing. This is what makes an American patriot, is the idea that we should all be of mixed race, we should all be that coffee color or that nice brown tan color, and that America will never fulfill its destiny and never complete its mission to equality and to real liberty until we all become the same sort of dusky, dusty tan color. And this is the viewpoint of the patriotic left, is that this is where we should go if it requires force to get there, use force. If it requires lies and persuasion to get to this objective, then use lies and persuasion. But this is the viewpoint, that the only true patriotism in America is to strive to become a mixed-race nation. And so, you know, that's what all of these laws are about. This is why the hate crime laws passed. This is why every state has bent its neck before the federal government and given in to every dictate of the federal government on race, is to push and force this nation to become a mixed race Brazil, to become another Brazil. And we are headed in the direction of Brazilian socialism, Brazilian fascism, which is a repressive government with a permissive society. And that's where our elites, our liberal elites, and our, the liberal establishment is taking us into Brazilian-style fascism with a permissive society but with a repressive government.
And whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, I suppose, to be fair, could be left to debate. Or could it, Bill? I mean, certainly we have a dissenting point of view on that sort of disastrous future and bleak future. But if the hate crimes bill is allowed to run its last full measure, we won't even be able to voice dissent lest we be locked up and arrested for so-called hate speech and saying that, you know, maybe we don't want to live like Brazil. Maybe we have a little bit higher standard of living here in America, a European-founded country. Maybe we want to keep things the way they are.
Oh, you don't want a country that has the highest AIDS incident of AIDS among the population in the Americas? You don't
I'm
want to live
saying,
in a country?
I'm just saying. I know it'd be hard to believe that someone wouldn't want that for themselves and their children, but let's just say there's backwards people like us out there, Bill, that exist, and we don't want that for whatever bizarre reason we would say we don't. I guess it's an extremist point of view to say that we ought to be allowed to say we don't want that, but if the federal government gets its way and the ADL gets its way, we're not going to be able to say that.
What is required is that white people have got to swallow that lump in their throat every time they hear the word racism and have got to start organizing around common ethnic interests. And even the dumbest liberal alive should see at some point that these other races and that these other militant racial groups, whether it's the NAACP or La Raza or GLAD, the homosexual group, or any of these other groups, if they think that they're going to find permanent common ground with these militant organizations, they're going to be rudely awakened to the fact that they're just considered other white people. You're just another white person. And as we've mentioned on the show numerous times, the numerous incidents and cases where white people trying to be liberals and trying to embrace diversity and trying to celebrate multiculturalism have been sometimes stabbed, beaten, murdered for their efforts to go on hands and knees before races that essentially despise them. And they're not going to escape the common fate of all other white people. So you better begin thinking in terms of your ethnic best interests. And uniting with other people who say, you know, we've got rights too, and our rights matter, and we're going to pursue our best interests without hesitation and without worrying about what other people do, because these people are going to pursue their best interests regardless of what's best for white people. We've learned that over 50 years if we've learned nothing else.
Well, and again, I don't have a problem whatsoever. I'm not going to be a hypocrite like the leftists are. I don't have a problem whatsoever. And the minorities, now again, we always have to put forth the disclaimer that when you're talking minorities, there's not a more distinct global minority than European Americans, Caucasians. We're 8% of the global population and falling. But here in America, I have no problem whatsoever in the racial minorities in the year 2009 solidifying ethnically and engaging in ethnopolitics. As they do and as they are encouraged to do by the government and by the media. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, Bill, they, quite rightly, I might add, don't see our altruistic tendencies as a virtue. They see it as silly, and they see it as pathetic when I haven't seen a lot of gratitude. Have you seen any gratitude or gratefulness from the minorities of this country for all that European Americans have done for them in terms of passing laws and legislations to favor them, in terms of passing laws such as affirmative action and quotas and set-asides and welfare and everything that this country and its people have done for minorities? Do you see any gratitude there, Bill? No, they see it as absolutely pathetic and really contrary to human nature, and they don't see it as something to be thankful for. And in fact, it only emboldens them to pounce upon our weaknesses, and it is a weakness.
It is a weakness because it transcended the bounds of ordinary goodwill.
I'm not saying don't be good to others who aren't like you. I'm just saying don't put anyone above above your own family. And as the Greeks have always said, and as Sam Dixon has said on the show, all things in moderation. Even a virtue when carried to an extreme can become a detriment, and that's where we are now for sure.
Well, we are for sure because we allowed these things to become law. And once these things become law, they become rights. And once they become rights, then they become, you know, the feeling that you're born to have the right to these things. So what we've raised, as we know, and this discussion has been going on since the 60s, once you start a welfare state, you raise a welfare class. And the welfare class exists to consume more of what someone else produces. They cannot stop consuming more, because if they do, there's always the chance that we will give less. So, you know, at one time, the poverty line was at a certain income. So that if you were above that poverty line, you really had no right or any reason to go and get on welfare. Well, you see, the poverty line has been going up. So now that someone who makes a wage that will sustain a family can still be considered below the poverty line and can get welfare benefits. Well, once you do that, why bother working? Why bother going out and getting a job? So you have generation after generation after generation being raised on welfare. That has become their right, not a relief system for those who can't help themselves. And I don't think we should have ever even had that relief system. I think that poverty is a natural occurrence of any society. And whenever you have a society built around cities or built around a common economy, then you're going to have poverty. So it's pointless to try to eliminate it by taxing one group for the benefit of another.
We'll be back with more right after this. Sit tight, everybody. The political cesspool concludes in just a moment.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the final segment of tonight's live show, July 18th, 2009. James Edwards and Bill Rowland here in the political cesspool with you tonight. Little teaser for next week. Be sure to make plans to tune in. We're going to be joined by Don Wassel, who, among other things, administers the website castfootball.us. And for all you sports fans out there, Don is going to be on next week to talk about the discrimination that takes place against European-American athletes in sports, particularly professional sports. And you're not going to want to miss what he has to say. He's been on with us before, was a dynamite guest. He's going to be back next week. And sports are important. We all love sports. We've all played sports. Sports has a big impact on our society and our culture, and they always have, going back to the ancient Olympics. Unfortunately, now sports plays an increasingly detrimental role in our society, and Don's going to be talking about that next week. So Don Wassel coming up. We also talk about how proud we are about the continued logical progression of this radio program. If you want to support our show, you can do it. You can give us your moral support, maybe even your financial support, by going to thepoliticalcesspool.org. You can donate online, help our work continue, send us an email, join up for the email list, read the blog, stay tuned with all the news that is news about this show in between our weekly live broadcasts here on the Liberty News Radio Network, of course, every Saturday night. So that disclaimer out of the way, back to Bill Rowland. Bill, we have obviously just a few minutes left this evening, but I enjoyed our conversation in advance of the program tonight so much. I just want to get you to share your thoughts with the audience about something that seems to be a recurring theme within the Republican Party. We talk about the culture war that's continuing to be waged. I don't know how much of it is left to be fought. They seem to be pretty much wiping the floor with us right now in terms of the culture war. We see a lot of things to take hope in, but we got to certainly mobilize more effectively. It would be obviously easier to win victories more often if we had more organizations like the Council of Conservative Citizens and the Political Cesspool. It would be great even if we had a political party in America that stood up for the interests of the founding stock like they do in Great Britain with the British National Party, but we don't. What we have here is the Republican Party, the party that a lot of woebegone conservatives believe to be their party, and it's not anymore, if it ever was. But, Bill, I came across just an astoundingly bizarre statement in one of the local Memphis papers this week. It was an interview with the current chairman of the Shelby County Republican Party, which is, of course, the county that Memphis can be found in. It's a majority black county, even though Tennessee is overwhelmingly white. Obviously, Davidson County, which is Nashville, and Shelby County, which is Memphis, have large black communities. And because of that, the Republicans aren't winning any seats in these countywide races. They're getting routed. In fact, they're getting routed to the point where they don't even field candidates anymore. So, long story short, the newspaper asked the Republican county chairman how the GOP in Shelby County is going to continue to compete on countywide elections. And he said, well, we've got to completely invest ourselves in the black communities. He said it might take 15 years. It might take up to 15 years before they trust us, but it's going to be well worth it. Obviously, it goes without saying, Bill, that the Republican Party of Shelby County, like the Republican Party of the United States of America, is not going to get any of these votes ever, no matter what they do. They never have. They never will. It makes little to no sense for the Republican Party of Shelby County to go after these votes, but it absolutely makes no sense for the national GOP to do it. All they would have to do in order to continue to win elections is to, first of all, field a nominally conservative candidate, and then, after doing so, increase your white vote by 1%. What they're trying to do is increase their black and Hispanic vote by 50 or 60%, when they could very easily reach some of these disenchanted conservative Republicans that have so long made up their base. Bill, it's a recurring theme here in the show. We've talked about it so much, but when you read it again in a freshly printed interview, the key to Republican success is getting the people who will never vote for you to vote for you. I don't know, Bill. It kind of makes a guy like me scratch my head, and you came up with some great responses to that in our chat earlier.
What I said when our conversation was that the late Sam Francis had it exactly right. The Republican Party is the stupid party. And the Republican Party has never acknowledged that the voter base is white Christian males, if you like. They've never acknowledged that. They have always been reaching for the unattainable in terms of creating the big tent Republican Party. And this is a term that was going around several years ago. They wanted to be the big tent party. Well, the big tent folded because they did not bring in minority voters. There is nothing in the Republican platform that appealed to minorities in terms of, you know, cutting back on welfare, cutting back on spending. Even moderate Republican economic conservatives could not win black votes. And one thing that I know for sure from you know, what, for instance, so-called conservative Republicans like Newt Gingrich were doing in Georgia just a few years ago, was actually discouraging promising white candidates from running in statewide elections or even for some national elections, because he was determined to get blacks as candidates. And he was perfectly willing to overthrow or to push aside a promising and potentially victorious white candidate from a black candidate, because the whole point was to build this big tent mentality, which has failed time and time and again for the Republican Party.
Well, why would you want to have people in your tent, so to speak, that don't believe in the platform of the party? Why would you want those people in anyway?
Well, it's the false belief among the Republicans that they can use the, you know, that there's some magical formula, some magical argument that will bring these people over to a side of conservative, fiscal conservatism or social conservatism. And they're just not going to do it because the blacks have already established in the Democratic Party a stronghold for their views. Blacks who may be against homosexual marriage and against some of the other social issues that the Republicans grab onto, they've already established their place in the Democratic Party. And so they're going to continue to support the Democratic Party for the sake of more civil rights legislation, more federal handouts, more affirmative action. You're not going to win those black Democrats over to the Republican Party because they already know how they will vote on things as Democrats. Why should they change parties? There's no point in it. So, you know, the Republicans have always treated their base, the solid constituency that was built starting with the Reagan Democrats, always treated that constituency an orphan branch of the Republican Party as essentially dumb animals who will vote for them no matter what. And this is the arrogance that has guided the party for years and years and years, since even before the Goldwater era. The Rockefeller Republicans are still running the party. They still get their way. And on the local level, they have penetrated all the way down to county and city and small little Republican clubs, because they're determined that what they're going to push through is the idea of the big corporate America, and we're going to push for prosperity. We're going to get Wall Street running again, and this is all they care about. So they don't care about race. They don't even care about the gay issue. They'll switch sides on that if they think that they can get lower taxes or spending going their way for the military or for, you know, the protection of the Holy State of Israel and some other foreign war, then that's what they'll go for. They don't care anything about us. So it's really Jefferson Davis's revenge that, you know, what was once a white Republican from Illinois has been supplanted by an African Republican from Illinois. I mean, there's almost a sense of cruel justice there for us white Southerners.
Well, Bill, man, what an excellent commentary there, as always, when delivered by you. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I asked you a question that had puzzled me, and it was, you know, are these Republican incompetents like Newt Gingrich and Ralph Reed and the chairman of the Shelby County GOP, are they just agents of destruction who are purposefully trying to destroy the party, and this is the quickest and most effective way to do it, and that's why they're advocating these tactics? Or do they truly believe that trying something repeatedly that has never worked might one day work, which is, I guess, the textbook definition of insanity or a psychopath? And you said, no, they really believe it. The Republican Party has somehow managed to elect it to its leadership the people who have nothing in common with the voters of the Republican Party.
Yes, and the resurrection from the dead of Ralph Reed is proof of this. Ralph Reed is a loser. He misguided every Republican candidate he ever advised, and he was a paid advisor to a number of Republican candidates. He was the kiss of death to the Republican Party in some southern states. And yet he is starting a new Christian coalition organization, which again is touting the big tent philosophy: all races, all peoples. We're going to all love each other as Republicans. Well, Ralph Reed advised the former governor of South Carolina,
Bill,
David
Beeson. We're out of time. I don't know how that happened, but we'll pick it up next week right there, Bill. See you next week, everybody.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.